This is TWiT.
There was an interesting article, again by Orrin Kerr, who we mentioned before, in the Washington Post, concerning the Silk Road prosecution and the data that is being used there and how it was obtained. And this is a particular interest to Orrin Kerr because he represented represented Weave. I'm forgetting his actual name, W-E-E-V, in a similar case involving something that was left openly available on the web, a security hole that was not closed, that was exploited to find information. Weave was prosecuted for it. Here the FBI has defended using research tactics like this, evidence gathering tactics like this, in order to prosecute Ross Ulbricht for the Silk Road activities. So what Orrin Kerr's point is that it's quite interesting for the Department of Justice on the one hand to say there was nothing constitutionally violative about what we did. We found, you know, we found this IP address that was leaking from the site due to a misconfiguration, and anybody could have found it. And we just gathered whatever information we could from the web, which is precisely the argument that was asserted on Weave's behalf in his case. His case wound up falling, not convicting him on completely other grounds. I think it was a venue-related issue, a totally procedural issue that didn't get to the heart of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is ultimately what Weave was accused of violating. So I thought this was a pretty interesting juxtaposition. I don't know if it's more than just a thought experiment, but do you think the DOJ, Colin, has sort of tied one hand behind their back if they want to once again try and prosecute someone under the CFAA for happening upon information that was not adequately secured?
I think they have tied it a little bit. This is a what started off, I think Orrin's article starts off very much like a thought experiment, and you've raised exactly the right question. Is it's not about what happened in the Silk Road prosecution and can they do that, although we should get into that a little bit, but it's more about, well, what does this say going forward? In a way, because in a way, this is a classic argument from hypocrisy. You can't say A and then do not A later, right? But the question is, well, when you resolve a hypocrisy, you can kind of choose one side or the other. You could say that Weave's actions were perfectly fine under the analysis that they're giving in the present Silk Road case, or you could say that neither Weave's actions were fine nor are the Silk Road actions fine. However, you know, taking the side of law enforcement just for a second, which is not something that I instinctively do, they would point to two things, and Orrin points to one of them. The CFAA specifically has a law enforcement exception. So if you are doing things that would otherwise violate the CFAA in pursuance of lawful investigation, you're off the hook. So they could point to that. As Orrin points out in his article, they didn't actually do that here, but they didn't need to. But the second thing they would say, listen, law enforcement breaks the law all the time in order to catch lawbreakers. You wouldn't say that police can't speed to catch speeders, so why can't they sort of hack about to catch hackers is the argument in a nutshell. I'm not entirely convinced, though, in this case, that their position, which isn't articulated as well as Orrin did or you did or even I did in their briefing, wouldn't have some consequences going forward. They seem to suggest that publicly available data, if you just sleuth about, it's not hacking, right? Sleuthing is not violating the CFAA. You're just looking at what's there. So I do think at least a creative lawyer, creative criminal defense lawyer, if faced with a prosecution of his or her client under the CFAA in the future, should at least try to raise this. I would have no doubt that the criminal authorities would immediately point to the law enforcement exception in there. But it does, you know, it raises the general question about government lawbreaking or government reckless activity. In his classic dissent many, many years ago before wiretapping was illegal, the Olmstead case, Justice Brandeis said that government should set an example. They shouldn't violate the law, not just because it's against the law, because what example does that send? And while perhaps we should tolerate it with a policeman driving, you know, 75 miles an hour to catch a 70 mile an hour speeder, they shouldn't drive so recklessly as to put other people in danger. The analogy isn't perfect here, but I do think, you know, it raises some deeper issues that we should think about.
Well, I think the question is made a little bit subtle, only because the actual CFAA violation or the actions by the federal government in sleuthing, which I think that's an awesome distinction. I think that I'm gonna totally adopt that. The sleuthing versus what was it, hacking? I think so. I think the sleuthing that they did was it would have been a violation if done by a civilian to another website under the CFAA, only under a very sort of expansive reading of the CFAA. In other words, the government, what they did was they took information that was leaking publicly. It wasn't that they actually hacked in, is that there was some sort of information that was around the edges of the protected information. But it was clearly intended by the Silk Road people to be secret, and they capitalized on that information. That action of capitalizing on public information that was intended to be secret, that is in the CFAA, and I'm not sure if it's actually in the statute or only by sort of judicial interpretation, but it's a very subtle question, because it's not so clear. Like on a close textual reading of the CFAA, what they did would not have been over the line. What the government did would not have been over the line, except for this, it was intended to be private exception, and that makes the question a lot closer, because it's much more about sort of what Silk Road was putting out there. And I think you correctly hit it actually in the discussion we just had, is that, you know, questions like this always come up in the context of bad guys, but they're really meant to protect good guys, or that's an oversimplification. But and that's, I think, a similar problem here, is that I'm a brown coat at heart. I don't think Silk Road is a bad guy. But you know, a little bit further. But on the assumption that the sort of the legal establishment generally will have that Silk Road is a bad actor of some sort, then you're faced with this problem where the government engaged in a behavior that was arguably not over even the line set by the CFAA or whatever.
Right.
And I mean, arguably not even over that. And then, of course, there is the fact that the CFA itself has exceptions for law enforcement, things like that. So it's just a tighter question than I think we've been giving it credit for.
Well, the problem though is CFAA, and again, Colin would be more versed on this than I am, but seems to have a history, or rather a notorious reputation, of being expansively read by prosecutors to terribly dire effect. So right. That... you know, for them to take the stance, for the Department of Justice to take the stance that doing something akin to what they did here was not, and again, they did not bring up the CFAA, I think, in their briefing. They were all about the Fourth Amendment and whether they were acting constitutionally. But I think that the issue is a prosecutor might read this entirely differently than Orrin Kerr would. Do you concur, Colin?
Absolutely. And there's no doubt in my mind that this story, we're even discussing this story because Orrin made a connection that he could, because he defended Weave. And he said, well, that's because the government in this case, the Silk Road case, said our actions are entirely lawful. And he said to himself, Orrin said to himself, well, that's not the position you took at all in my case, right?
Yeah.
so...